Welcome to the Red Zone.
The Red Zone. Red Zone.
With Soren Petro. An exclusive presentation of KCChiefs.com. For the next 60 minutes, this is your in-depth, inside look at the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, here's your host, Soren Petro.
And good afternoon and welcome. You're in the Red Zone here at KCChiefs.com. Soren Petro with you on a Wednesday as we are feeling a lot better as Chiefs fans. I don't know about anybody else, but the Chiefs with a nice win on the road at St. Louis, a team with a lot to play for in their own right as they fight for the NFC West crown. You don't just think somebody's going to roll over and fall down for you. And the Rams didn't do that, and the Chiefs took a victory away from the St. Louis Rams. Good win for the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll talk about it today here in the Red Zone. We'll also talk to Tim Castillo, Chiefs fullback, will join us. Love talking to Tim Castillo. Bright guy, a lot of fun. We'll talk to Tim Castillo coming up in our segment a little bit later on. We'll get him available and on the horn. Also going to talk in our next segment to Willie Donick, 104.5 The Zone in Nashville, Tennessee. He joins us to break down the Titans for next week. We'll get you some of the stats, some of the numbers that came out of the last game coming up later on as well. But let's start a little review from the Rams game, a couple of the hidden maybe gems, if you will, that led to the Kansas City Chiefs victory, maybe the most important factors that haven't been talked about, and the Chiefs getting a win. Also give you the playoff picture here in a second, but the Chiefs 27-13 winners in St. Louis. And I don't know that any game is a textbook game. Maybe if the Chargers had a textbook game against the Chiefs a couple of weeks ago, I suppose that'd be the closest thing where everything appeared to be working for the San Diego Chargers and nothing for the Kansas City Chiefs. But this game, one that you felt like the Chiefs would give the Rams their best shot. Coming off that embarrassing game to the Chargers, the Chiefs would be focused and ready to go and really come out and throw a punch at the St. Louis Rams. And it didn't work that way. And I think it was a little bit scary. I don't know about anyone else. The Chiefs fans I was watching the game with said, oh, my God, we're looking at San Diego all over again. Rams go right down the field, get a field goal. Special teams struggles to get a stop on Danny Amendola on the punt return, giving the Rams great field position in Chiefs territory. Looking like they're set up and ready to go right back in. I know following the Twitters, following the tweets that were out there on Twitter as to what the mindset was of a lot of the Chiefs folks, there was a perception that, oh, here it is again. Boy, the Chiefs have not woken up from San Diego. They're still in that slumber. And I'm going to disagree. Was I concerned? You bet. Were the Chiefs concerned? I'm sure they were, down 3-0 and 6-0 after a 31-0 shutout. Hey, you get shut out in the first quarter, you have about 16 yards of offense. There's reason to be concerned, and I have no doubt that this offense and this football team as a whole, Todd Haley, they were very concerned that, is this team going to wake up? The difference was the defense came to play. And the Chiefs would end up putting up close to 400 yards of offense, 27 points on the board, 200-yard rushing day. There was a lot to like about the offense of the Kansas City Chiefs. A lot to like about Matt Cassel being back in there, Jamal Charles going over 100 yards, Thomas Jones going over 10,000 for his career. A lot of offense to like. But you know what? To me, the story of this game was the defense of the Kansas City Chiefs. Early on, the Rams had a very good game plan. They'd obviously scripted out a great first series. They're going down the field on the defense, but it didn't panic. And as we've seen many times, Romeo Crennel defenses do, they'll give you some yards in the middle of the field, but it gets a lot tougher to score on them once you push their back up against the wall. That happened for the Chiefs. They finally stiffen, keep the Rams out of the end zone, force them to settle for a field goal. Offense goes nowhere. Team punts. As I mentioned, Amendola gives the Rams point-blank range to go ahead and put more points on the board. And there it is. Here we go again. What's going on? The defense, instead of crying in its beer or worrying about, this isn't an ideal situation. We really could have used a drive. They go back out on the field. They immediately get a stop on the Rams. Made corrections. A lot of people talk about halftime corrections. That's great for college football. The NFL, you got to correct on the fly. And sometimes you got to correct very quickly. And the Chiefs defense was able to do that with virtually no time on the sidelines to circle the wagons and figure out what's going wrong. They do figure out what's going wrong. They get a stop. They hold the Rams to a field goal. St. Louis forced to settle then on a 52-yard field goal. Give some credit to Josh Brown that he bangs that through. In fact, I believe on that drive they even lost yards. They settled for a 52-yard field goal, and now they're up 6-0. And from that point on, that came with about four to 4.5 minutes or so left in the quarter. From that point on, It settled into what looked like was going to be a defensive struggle. The Chiefs did not immediately score to take a 7-6 lead. In fact, they would take a 7-6 lead on a Leonard Pope catch from Matt Cassel. However, it came with 6 minutes 49 seconds to go in the second quarter. So for the last, say, almost 5 minutes of the first quarter and the first 8-9 minutes of the second quarter, it was a stalemate. And the Chiefs' defense kept the Chiefs in the game. The offense finally started to get some traction after the Chiefs' defense had really put the clamps on Sam Bradford and that Rams offense that had looked so good in that first drive going down the field and setting up the 37-yard field goal. They really took the momentum away from the St. Louis Rams, taking them off the field, getting the stops, and giving the ball back to the offense several times before they finally could figure out what was not working. What was it the Rams were doing different? If you heard Matt Cassel's interview on CBS television after the game, he said the Rams came with some, they knew they were a blitzing team, but that they came with some things that they had not seen on film. So it took a little time for them to adjust. They switch gears in the second quarter. They get things going. They punch in a touchdown to make it 7-6 and get one more before the half to make it 14-6, and really they were in control of that game and would not lose control the rest of the way. The offense adds a field goal, another field goal, and then ultimately a touchdown to seal the victory after St. Louis pulled to within 7 with 4 minutes to go in the game. Immediately, a Jamaal Charles 80-yard run sets up a Thomas Jones 2-yard touchdown run and a 14-point win. All those offensive things are great. And it's certainly a good sign that they could circle the wagons themselves, get a new game plan together, and make things happen. But it doesn't happen if the defense doesn't get the stops early in the game. If the defense doesn't limit the damage from touchdown to field goal and then start getting three and outs. Great job by Romeo Crennel and his defense to me. That was the story of the game. Bend but don't break on the first drive and then holding the Rams, giving that offense a chance to catch its breath. You know, if it had been like the Bronco game, it would have been touchdown, 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 and the team would have been so buried it wouldn't have mattered if the offense got things going. Instead, the defense able to control the Rams' offense and give them a chance to get back in there. Great job by Romeo Crennel and his defense. The other side of this game that's very important to remember is another 200-yard rushing day for the Kansas City Chiefs. 126 for Charles, 62 for Jones, 17 for Cassel. Jackie Battle even chipping in with 9 yards on short yardage situations, a 7-yard run and a 2-yard run. They have a 210-yard day, and the Chiefs get back to running the football. In the first quarter, it didn't look like they were going to be able to run the ball. And obviously, the 80-yarder in the fourth went a long way towards getting the Chiefs back over the 200-yard mark. But that running game is vital. They've got to have it. And once the running game got going, the passing attack followed suit, and the Chiefs played Chiefs-style football to get the win. So the running game, huge. Matt Cassel, how much bigger could it be? The numbers, well, they're not beautiful. 15 of 29 for 184, a touch and an INT, a 68.8 quarterback rating on the day. They're not fantastic numbers, but certainly a gutty performance, literally playing without part of his gut and a hole in his gut. Matt Cassel led this team on scoring drives, kept them calm, didn't panic when the team got down and made plays when they needed it. In fact, his numbers could look better if not for some drops. Drops by Dwayne Bowe, Terrence Copper, Dexter McCluster. McCluster had one go off his face mask. And there were some errant throws. There was one obvious overthrow by Matt Cassel. He probably wasn't as sharp as hopefully he'll be the rest of the year and when he's going and playing at his best. But Matt Cassel getting it done for this football team just a week and a half after having appendectomy surgery, a great sign for the Kansas City Chiefs. And I think the combination of how bad they got beat in San Diego without Matt Cassel, and then the way Matt Cassel played in this game, the toughness he showed, and one, taking a lot of hits, one sack, I don't remember, or I guess it was a near sack, he'd gotten rid of the ball. It was Chris Long or who, somebody seemed to put a helmet or a shoulder right on his stomach, right where you knew it had to hurt, and he popped right back up. Then he had a chance to scramble for a first down. He runs for it. Could have slid, but doesn't. Puts a shoulder down and runs through it, hops up, and is pumping the fist after a first down. The combination of those two games, how the team played without him, coupled with how they played with him, how he acted, how he handled himself out there, personally, I think we've put to rest for quite some time now who is the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs. It's Matt Cassel, and it's been proven out in two different ways over the last couple of weeks. Great game for Cassel. Wallace Gilberry, 3 sacks, continues to be an outstanding situational pass rusher, a guy with a motor that never gives up. I've heard some people say, well, there was kind of garbage time. You know, Kendrick Lewis's 2 picks and 2 of Gilberry's 3 sacks that came late in the game. Ask the New York Giants about performing late in the game defensively, about padding the stats with sacks or interceptions. If they could have done it against Michael Vick and the Eagles, they would have done it, and they might have gotten a win. Instead, they give up 28 points in the last 8 minutes, and they lose. I didn't see garbage time out there. This was not a 51-0 route. This was not garbage time. The Chiefs defense needed stops. They needed picks. They needed sacks. They got them both from Lewis and Gilberry. Big day from both of those. And welcome back, Chris Chambers. How about Chris Chambers, who's been kind of a missing man? You wonder what happened last year, bursting on the scene for the Kansas City Chiefs and really becoming their number one wideout during the year. He's been inactive, a healthy scratch a number of times this year, back on the field, making some great catches. No, you look at the stats, 3 catches, 42 yards, no touchdowns. Nobody's going to say, boy, what an incredible day. But you go back and watch the play and some of the passes he caught, red-hot passes, some of them over his head, where it looked like he was pulling in the back half of the football. In fact, I sat there going, wow, I didn't think Matt Cassel could actually throw it that hard. But pulling it in to get a first down, going low. Chris Chambers providing a nice threat on the other side of Dwayne Bowe, who, as I said, had a couple of drops. 2 catches only in his 6 targets. Chris Chambers coming through, making some big catches and moving the chains. Nice day for Chris Chambers. Good day all around. Win as a team, lose as a team. Kansas City Chiefs got it done. A good team win in St. Louis, and now they remain in the driver's seat of the AFC West. 2 wins, and they are in. 1 win and a Charger loss, and they are in as champions of the AFC West. Your update on the playoff picture of the Chiefs. Right now, most likely, if they're going to make it, it's going to be as the number 3 seed. I will point out they still and will throughout the rest of the year lose the tiebreaker to San Diego. So they have to finish a full game in front of the Chargers. However many they win, the Chiefs have got to win. All right? No more, no less. That's the one thing to keep in mind. They cannot make it as a wild card. They will not be a wild card because to be in the wild card, they'd have to lose the AFC West, which would mean they'd have to be 10-6 or worse. If they're 10-6 based on the games that are left, they cannot win divisional tiebreakers against the Ravens or Jets, and they also lose any kind of 3 ways that might come up tiebreaker-wise. So the Chiefs will either be AFC West champions or they will watch the playoffs on TV. Now, they're slotted in most likely right now. They are the 3 seed if the playoffs were today. They're the 3 seed hosting the New York Jets in the first round. There's an outside chance that they can move up to the 2 seed and actually get a bye week and then host a game. But for that to happen, both the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Baltimore Ravens would have to lose. Not one of them, both of them have to lose both of their remaining games. Pittsburgh has Carolina at home, not likely to lose, and they go to Cleveland. Browns playing better football, maybe that happens. Both those things happening, I don't think so. And in addition to that, the Ravens have to lose both of their last 2 games. They go to Cleveland this week and then play host to the Cincinnati Bengals. I just cannot see both those teams going 0-2. It's still a mathematical possibility the Chiefs could be a 2 seed, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen. That leaves the 3 or the 4 seed. How do they get to the 3 seed? Well, just win out and they're the 3 seed. They'll be there. The 4 seed, which seems less likely but is a possibility, is that the Chiefs would lose one of their 2 remaining games, come home 10-6, or maybe even lose both of their remaining games and have the Chargers lose both of their remaining games. Or if the Chiefs go 1-1 in their last 2 and the Chargers lose a game, they could be 10-6 or 9-7 in AFC West champions. If that comes down to it, and it's the Colts that win the AFC South, head-to-head tiebreakers between the Chiefs and Colts, the Colts will win. So if the Chiefs and Colts best they can do is 10-6. If they get to 10-6, the Chiefs get to 10-6, the Chargers fall to 9-7, the Chiefs would actually fall to the 4 seed with the Colts bumping up to the 3 seed. Doesn't really matter either way. They would play a home game and then go on the road with a win, and their opponent figures to be either Baltimore or the Jets, possibly the Steelers. Those 3 seem locked in, and it's just a matter of who the Chiefs end up against. Again, can't be the wild card, got to be the division winner, need to win more than the Chargers win, or need to win as many, I should say, as the Chargers win. Not likely, but still mathematically possible to get a bye. Reality looks like that the Chiefs will play, if they can win, against the Tennessee Titans and Oakland Raiders, or match the Chargers' win total the rest of the way, they'll play a home game at Arrowhead Stadium that first week of the playoffs. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to Willie Donick, 104.5 The Zone in Nashville, Tennessee, get his thoughts on what the Titans bring to the table.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
Every Sunday, A city of more than 2 million unites. A community of fans thousands strong anticipates. A team of 53 players charges the field.
It's a sweep left from the fullback, and a great block springs up to the outside. He's up the left sideline.
And one grocery store is proud to support them all.
20. He's going to outrace everyone to the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs. A Kansas City Chiefs fan, they'll tailgate just about anywhere. And they live to hear the three most important words ever.
Tailgate Kansas City!
With Hy-Vee's weekly tailgate specials, you'll find everything you need for your next Chiefs tailgate or Chiefs party. Stop into Hy-Vee and stock up with new tailgate specials every week.
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Hi, we're Giacomo and Angelo, and we make Palermo's Pizza.
We actually grew up in a pizzeria where we learned to toss pizza dough by hand.
So you can believe our new hand-tossed style frozen pizzas offer taste your family will love, guaranteed.
Yep, our pizza's 200% authentic, like us.
200%?
Yeah, 100% times two of us.
Well, obviously, Papa didn't teach you math. Anyway, look for our new hand-tossed style pizzas and try one.
Palermo's, it's pizzeria perfect.
And the official frozen pizza of the Chiefs.
It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angling, cutback, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Jamal Charles!
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job, and we'll win this game! And the Chiefs put the hammer down!
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good! Ryan Succop wins the game in overtime!
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to kcchiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul. Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on kcchiefs.com.
Welcome back. You're in the Red Zone here at kcchiefs.com. Soren Petro with you as we look ahead to the final 2 weeks of the season. Coming up next for the Kansas City Chiefs, the Tennessee Titans. Joining us right now to talk about the Titans and where they're at, Willie Donick, 104.5 The Zone in Nashville is with us. Willie, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
How are the Tennessee Titans doing? I assume much better now after a win than they were with a six-game losing streak on their shoulders going into that game. What's the mindset in Nashville right now?
Well, the mindset is still totally unknown. I would say that people feel better about the win yesterday for sure, but they're not sure if the Titans have really found what ails them or they just ran into a team just as miserable as they have been. Houston Tech. Things have really been struggling for this franchise for the last 6 weeks.
And what went wrong? At one point, they were flying high at 5-2, coming off a win against the Philadelphia Eagles. They looked like a legitimate, not only contender for their division, but a team that was going to be a tough out for anybody the rest of the way. And they did go through six straight losses. What happened after that Philadelphia game?
Well, number one, I would say the first thing that happened, they lost to a team in San Diego that finally started to hit its stride, and they caught them at the wrong time. They still didn't play poorly in that game, but Vince Young got hurt late in the game, could not finish it, and that really started his downfall when you get down to it. They had a bye week. They came back against Miami. He wasn't quite ready to play, and then they turned around and lost to Washington after they lost to Miami, and that's when everything went tumbling down, is when Vince Young injured his thumb and supposedly wanted to go back into the game. Jeff Fisher did not think he was physically able to do it. Vince Young threw a tantrum at the end of the game, walked out of the locker room in the team's end-game meeting of an excruciating overtime loss to Washington. We're still trying to figure out how they lost the game. And things have really never been the same since.
Where do things sit right now between the organization and Vince Young, between Jeff Fisher and Vince Young, between Jeff Fisher and the organization?
very ice cold between Vince Young and Jeff Fisher. They have not spoken. The only thing that has happened is the Monday after the Redskins game, after Vince Young clearly showed up Jeff Fisher and embarrassed him in front of the team, he came in to get his rehab or his MRI done on his thumb and was told pretty much to leave the facility, not by Jeff Fisher, but by Dow Loggins, the quarterback's coach. And ever since then, all that has transpired is a text message from Vince Young to Jeff Fisher apologizing. That did not sit well with Jeff Fisher. So it's been a where's Vince since then. He showed up a couple of times this past week. He showed up on the sideline for half of the game yesterday. It has been totally bizarre. But amidst all this, you've got Bud Adams, the owner, who lives in Houston. Of course, Vince Young is from Houston. He still wants Vince Young, I think, long-term to be the quarterback. And so everything sort of hinges on what Bud Adams decides to do after the season, because it's pretty much tabled with Vince Young on IR.
You know, is there any chance that this is the end of Jeff Fisher's run with the Titans?
I think there's a chance, better chance than has ever been. I think you would have a lot of media here that never sense that he's been in any trouble, even though there's been some ups and downs. I think with him having 1 year left in his contract and with Vince Young having 1 year left on the contract, I think Jeff Fisher is tired of having Vince Young as the quarterback. I think that relationship is severely broken. So I think at least one of them will not be back next year, and maybe both.
What's your feeling about who the right quarterback is? We know they went on a great run with Kerry Collins a couple of years ago, but then they went on a great run with Vince Young after getting off to such a slow start last year. Who is the guy, as you watch it, that's the best to lead this team as the quarterback?
Well, I think over the last couple of years, Vince Young has gotten better, for sure. But his habits are still such to where I think that the coaching staff just does not believe in him to the degree that you would like to see. I don't think they like his extra work that he does, and I think they believe that he could do a lot better if he really dedicated himself. And obviously, the example he used after the game against Washington was inexcusable, and that's just not the kind of behavior you could have from your quarterback. So I just don't think everybody believes in Vince Young. What's interesting is some of his teammates really like him, and they want to support him despite all the issues. But it's really difficult to tell what's going to happen right now.
And of course, they'll come into Arrowhead. We're talking to Willie Donick, 104.5 The Zone in Nashville, Tennessee. They'll come into Arrowhead with no Vince Young, with Kerry Collins, and really with very little to play for. Is this a team that has the pride to come in and, you know, throw a wrench at the Chiefs? I think this is a dangerous situation. I've already said it, for the Chiefs with the Tennessee Titans, because they had everything to prove after just being humiliated by the Chargers to go on the road and get the win against the Rams. And at the end of the year is the Raiders, a team they feel like they've got payback for, and could very well be the only thing standing between them and the playoffs. This game has a little bit of a letdown factor. How up will the Tennessee Titans be coming into Arrowhead?
It's hard to say. They're still mathematically alive somehow. If they won the last two and both the Colts and the Jags lost their last two, which is really unforeseeable, then technically the Titans could still win the division. In a three-way tie with three teams at 8-8, somehow the Titans would still win the tiebreaker, which baffles me, but I still don't know what you're going to see from the Titans. Kerry Collins did play better yesterday. He has slipped a little bit. He's had a couple of health issues as well this year, which have taken his game down a half a notch. But one thing they've got going for them is Kenny Britt is back healthy again. And when he's in the lineup, that seems to really help their offense click.
Yeah, and their offense starts with Chris Johnson. I don't think there's any way. I know he was talking about 2,500 yards. I can remember Priest Holmes talking about 2,000 after he set the touchdown record. Guys get excited after they do great things at the running back position. I think they forget how hard it is to do what they've just done, and they always feel like they can do a little bit more. He's had one heck of a follow-up season to what was an incredible year, but how frustrating has it been because he hasn't been able to recapture that magic that had him rushing for 2,000 yards?
I think it's been very frustrating. I think the biggest difference has been the play of the offensive line, and that's been probably the most disappointing thing. I think you heard a lot of people, if you looked around different publications, websites, you might have seen Titans possibly the best offensive line in football, and that just has not been the case. They have had trouble dealing with the fronts that have faced Chris Johnson. They haven't been able to spring him for as many long runs as he has in the past. And he's still been very solid, but it's just been a little bit of a struggle.
Yeah, the and 4.5 yards per carry is still a very good performance out of a running back, but not the phenomenal numbers he put up last year. And that's the difference between being kind of sneaking up on some guys and actually being the guy everyone focuses on. How much does he miss having a top shelf running mate to take off some of that load and present a different challenge for a defense to have to prepare for?
Well, I don't think that's the issue. I don't think that's been the issue as much as just the offensive line play overall. I think they've had trouble getting the same level of play from the offense from the offensive line.
All right, last thing on the offensive side of the ball, Randy Moss. Can we figure out why the Titans? I mean, I guess we know why. The upside potential, recapture his old glory. It hasn't been there. Why hasn't he even come close to making a major impact for this team?
I think that has been the biggest bizarre thing that we've seen here with the Titans since they've been a franchise. Now, either Randy Moss cannot get himself free from coverage anymore, or they're just not throwing him the ball. It's really hard to tell. We've got all kinds of theories as to why it's happening, but it's to the point now with Kenny Britt back that he's barely even playing. He's played probably a total of 20 plays in the last two games, and they have not thrown him one pass. Not one catch, but we're talking about not even targeting him for a single pass play in the last two games. So Randy Moss has become a total afterthought.
Yeah, and it's hard to believe that a guy could go from being as productive as he was a couple of years ago to now on his third team and being this completely unproductive. We're talking to Willie Donick from 104.5 The Zone in Nashville. Defensively, this team has got to be – I mean, I would think this is a disappointment. Jeff Fisher team's known for playing defense. I think they felt like they had reloaded with some young talent, and that would be the strength of the team. Hasn't been the case. Why?
Well, I think that they really have done – about what we thought they were going to do before the season. I think they probably overachieved to get to 5-2. They were getting the pass rush then. They lost their first-round draft pick in Derek Morgan, who went down with an ACL. Little by little, they've had some attrition in the defensive line that has eroded their pass rush. And since then, it has been a struggle to get heat on the quarterback. And what's been happening is teams have been able to get long drives against them. They're converting a huge rate on third down. And they've had the ball for 38 to 40 minutes as a result. So the same thing starts happening each week. Now, yesterday, even without a bunch of injured players, they played better than they have in weeks. So I'm not sure what will carry over next week in Kansas City. But I think, by and large, people didn't expect too much from this defense. You hope that the defense could be average and the offense would pick up the slack. So I think expectations-wise, it's been the offense that's underachieved more than the defense.
Cortland Finnegan, is he one of those guys that you hate if he's on the other team but love when he's your teammate, or is he just a flat-out distraction?
Well, I think he's very popular here. He's the guy that does a lot of work with charities, I think more so, at least out front, than a lot of his teammates. And so I think he scores a lot of points there. They like sort of the underdog quality about him. He played at Samford. He was not a high pick. And I think he's won over a lot of people. Not that they condone what happened against Andre Johnson. They love his feistiness. They do see that he's gone over the line a couple of times here. But I think he would have to be one of the more popular Titans, especially on the defensive side.
Jason Babin, two more sacks last weekend. He's got 12 on the year, puts him in the top five in the NFL. This guy came through Kansas City, and it was ho-hum, yeah, thanks for stopping by. What has been the turnaround for him, if anything, or is this just a product? We talk a lot about sacks, especially individual sacks, not necessarily team sacks, but individual sacks being somewhat overrated because it can be a product of everybody else doing everything and the quarterback just falls in your lap. But 12 sacks is 12 sacks. This is a revitalization for a guy who was once a highly thought-of prospect, but had clearly become a journeyman when you come through an awful Kansas City defense, which it was a couple of years ago when he came through here, and really make no impact. Why is he exploding now?
Well, I'm going back a few more years. He was a first-round pick.
Yeah.
The Titans traded their first-round pick to the Texans, and they selected Jason Babin. They thought he was going to be a nice mix in the 3-4, and it turned out he was not a match there. And so what's ironic is years later, the Titans pick him up off the scrap heap for the minimum, and he ends up being a perfect fit as a rush end for them in the 4-3. So it's really hard to put your finger on it. He's just, he's got a good motor. He sort of fills in what the Kyle Vandenbosch was doing for them for a long time. Hard to grade him overall, but as a pass rush specialist, no doubt about it, he's done a nice pickup for them. I shudder to think what their pass rush would have looked like had he not been in there this year.
All right, but Willie, before I let you go, tell me your prediction. What do you think happens on Sunday in this football game? Who do you like? Give me a score, how it wraps up.
Well, I love where the Chiefs are right now in their building of a good team. I read the article in Sports Illustrated about Scott Pioli. You really have to like all the things they've done. I just like their chemistry a lot better. I like them playing at home. I think, honestly, that the Titans' win yesterday was a little bit more of an aberration against the Texans. I would be really surprised if the Titans could hang with the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs win the game fairly easily. If the one little disclaimer might be if Kenny Britt can get going once again, that loosens things up. And obviously, when you have Chris Johnson, it's dangerous. They've been getting some big chunks with those two when they're clicking, so they might be able to hang around if those two can get going. But I'll take the Chiefs.
All right. Any like them big, little? You got a score?
I'll say that the Chiefs' running game should be able to control the clock. I look for the Chiefs to have the ball 35 or more minutes. I'll say the Chiefs win it 24-17.
Very good. We always like the score, not to hold anyone to it, just to get a feel for what people are thinking. I hear sometimes people will go, I like that team by a lot. Oh, really? Okay, well, what do you got? At 24-20. Well, okay, yeah, all right. 24-17, solid touchdown win. I think that's probably where a lot of people have this game. And again, for me, it comes down to do the Chiefs give them their best punch and do the Titans give them their best punch? We know late in the year we'll see what people have to play for. Chiefs have a lot to play for, but also have a big game with the Raiders looming at the end. We'll see how this game plays out. Willie, great stuff as always. We always appreciate the time. Hopefully we get a chance to talk to you down the road.
No problem. Anytime, Seren.
The Red Zone with Seren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
Welcome to Chiefs Country, where fans like you wear their passion for their team like war paint. It's for you, Chiefs fans, that we created Chiefs Checking with the official Chiefs debit card and discounts on Chiefs gear all year long.
Visit Metcalf Bank or ChiefsChecking.com and for a limited time, sign up and score a Chiefs game day cooler.
Chiefs Checking, because you're not just a fan on Sunday.
Only at Metcalf Bank. Strong roots, endless possibilities. Member Central Bank Company, member FDIC. See bank for details.
Hey, Chiefs fans, I'm Josh Looney of KCChiefs.com.
And I am the Internet. I usually don't endorse websites, but KCChiefs.com is legit.
I know. At KCChiefs.com, you can check out my daily blog, exclusive video content, see what's going on with the team. You can also interact with other fans in Chiefs 365 and much more.
I'm so excited. I can barely contain myself.
You want the Chiefs? Go to the Chiefs at KCChiefs.com.
The NFL season is here.
Carroll's on his feet. Left side angry. Cutback.
And your Kansas City Chiefs are back.
Touchdown! Jamal Charles!
Cheer on the Chiefs all season long at the new Arrowhead Stadium. Don't wait. Get your tickets now at kcchiefs.com, the Arrowhead Stadium box office, or any Ticketmaster location. Head coach Todd Haley and your Kansas City Chiefs are determined and ready for battle, taking it game by game, and you won't want to miss any of the action live. Get your single game tickets now to see the Chiefs take on the Jaguars, Bills, Cardinals, Titans, or AFC West rivals the Broncos and Raiders. Great seats are available now at kcchiefs.com, the Arrowhead Stadium box office, or any Ticketmaster location. Come and get loud and cheer your Chiefs on to victory at the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul. Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Seren Petro, exclusively on KCChiefs.com.
All right, welcome back. You're in the Red Zone here at KCChiefs.com. Seren Petro back with you. Our thanks again to Willie Donick, 104.5 The Zone in Nashville, Tennessee, for taking some time out. Likes the Chiefs 24-17 coming up this week. I'll take it. I'll take a victory by any means as the Titans come in. I'll say this. I fear greatly The Tennessee Titans. I think this is the one that has the biggest chance for the Chiefs to have a letdown and get a loss out of the three games we knew they needed after the loss to San Diego. You knew coming off that big loss to the Chargers, a very ugly loss, one of the ugliest losses in the history of this franchise, that you were going to have a focused, motivated team when they went to St. Louis. Chiefs handled that business this past weekend. I think you'll have a very focused, motivated team when the Raiders come to town the final week of the season, if indeed that game is for a spot in the playoffs, which it could be with a win or a loss. If the Chiefs lose to the Titans, they could still be in a position where beat the Raiders and you're in if the San Diego Chargers lose this weekend to the Cincinnati Bengals. We detailed the playoff picture in the first segment, but it could still be a situation like that either way. But the letdown, if there is one, and I don't expect a big letdown or a no-show out of the Chiefs, but again, coming off a big emotional game where you bounce back and wanted to prove that you're a better team than you showed against San Diego, Chiefs did that emotional game in St. Louis, looking ahead to what should be an emotional, fiery game against the Raiders. To me, if there's a little valley, if there's a little trough, it's the game against the Tennessee Titans. Willie Donick likes the Chiefs 24-17. I'll take it. A win any way you can get it would set the Chiefs up, which, again, if the Chargers were to lose, would mean that the Chiefs had clinched the AFC West and would need the game against the Raiders. If the Chargers don't lose, it would mean the Raider game would be for the division, and I don't see any way that the Chiefs let down or have a a bad performance against the Oakland Raiders. We'll talk more about the Titans, what they bring to the table, a little bit later on. Let's talk about some of the things that were accomplished over the weekend, statistically speaking. The biggest one was Thomas Jones. Kudos, congrats to Thomas Jones as he became the 25th player in the history of the NFL to go over 10,000 yards. Thomas Jones, the third leading rusher in NFL history right now, the third leading rusher active in the NFL. Of course, he's 25th all time, but the third active leading rusher in the NFL behind both LaDainian Tomlinson and Fred Taylor. Thomas Jones is in 25th place. Fred Taylor up in 15th, and LaDainian Tomlinson in 6th. Fred Taylor is at 11,600 plus. LaDainian Tomlinson at 13,300 plus. So Thomas Jones has got a ways to go. If you're looking in the rearview mirror, Clinton Portis is next in line. He's at number 26 on the list at over 9,900 yards, 9,923 for his career. Ricky Williams next in line. He's just below 9,500 at number 28. Those are the guys coming behind him. Thomas Jones is 25th. 25th guy to go over 10,000 yards. What would 11,000 mean? If there's 11,000 more yards left in his legs, it would put him into the top 19 in NFL history, move him in front of Warrick Dunn. I was a little bit surprised when I saw Warrick Dunn's name up there, but 10,967 for Dunn. He is 19th all-time. It'd move him in front of Dunn and put him behind O.J. Simpson, who has a little over 11,000, 11,236 for the juice. If you can dream a dream and see 2,000 more yards for Thomas Jones, get him into the 12,000 club. Currently, that would put him at 15. Now, Thurman Thomas is 14th at 12,074. As I mentioned, Fred Taylor just under 11,700. If Taylor would move up into that club as well, he'd be the 16th player. So we'll see if Fred Taylor gets there. If he can get to 13,000, I mentioned Tomlinson's got 13,000 in his rearview mirror. He'd be the 8th back, unless Fred Taylor again gets there before him. He'd be the 8th back to get to 13,000 yards. The only backs in front of him at that point would be Eric Dickerson, LaDainian Tomlinson, Jerome Bettis, Curtis Martin, Barry Sanders, Walter Payton, and Emmitt Smith. If you want to dream a dream about the all-time record, Emmitt Smith has it, 18,355 yards for the top one. I don't think Thomas Jones is going to be able to get there, but kudos to a great running back in Thomas Jones, who became the 25th player to rush for 10,000 yards in his career. Chiefs picking up the win over the Rams means they're 4-0 against the NFC West this year, and now are 10-0 against the NFC West in their last 10 games. That's a heck of a streak. In fact, it's the third longest streak in the NFL. One team winning streak against a certain division. The Colts hold the record right now, the current active longest streak. 15 straight games the Colts have won against the AFC North. Pretty impressive to have a streak with teams like the Steelers and Ravens in there, but 15 straight for the Colts against the AFC North. The Chiefs have now won 10 in a row against the NFC West. They'll have to wait 4 more years to try to add to that streak. Matt Cassel Almost as impressive. He's now 8-0 against the NFC West with the win against the Rams, as he's won four this year and, of course, won four 2 years ago as the quarterback of the New England Patriots. So Matt Castle's got a personal 8-game win streak now against the NFC West, and barring a change of teams, he'll have to wait 4 years to add to that. His interception streak, or streak without an interception, I guess I should say, ended at 162. It was an incredible run. Before you think it's just going to start raining interceptions, he was well over 100 before he threw his last one. Here's hoping that it's another 100 passes before Matt Castle throws his next interception. But his run ended at 162, a very impressive run for Matt Castle. And kudos to Ryan Succop, Mr. Irrelevant from last year's draft, banging through a 53-yard field goal, tying his career high, and had a 51-yarder made as well. If not for a penalty that pushed the Chiefs back, and they had to punt and tip your cap to Dustin Colquitt, who had a fine day punting for the Kansas City Chiefs. As you know, you get pushed back like that, you think, oh, man, what a tough spot. Last thing you want is to see a kick just boom through and end up being a waste. Instead, he nails it down inside the 10. The Chiefs pick up great field position after losing the 51-yard field goal because of the penalty. Brian Waters called for a false start. They lose the field goal, but still get great field position on the St. Louis Rams, as Dustin Colquitt then comes in and does his part of the equation and picks things up. Colquitt 6 for 285. That's a 47.5 average with a long of 72, which I believe was the fifth longest in his career. Curtis, is that right? Did I have that right? Fifth longest in his career? Tied for the third longest. I'm sorry. He's got an 81-yarder against the Chargers, 73 against the Raiders, another 72 against the Raiders in this one for 72 yards. So the kicking game, no doubt, the place kicking and the punting for the Kansas City Chiefs, absolutely a real strength for this football team, and something that could pay big dividends when you start talking about a playoff run. As we said, really the Chiefs, they started the playoffs last week. The game against the Rams is the first of three. The Chargers looking pretty impressive. They're going to have to win to stay in front. If they can do that, they will be AFC West divisional champions. All right, we'll take a break. You're listening to The Red Zone.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com. It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angle, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jamal Charles.
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job and we'll win this game. And the Chiefs put the hammer down.
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good. Ryan Succop wins the game in overtime.
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to kcchiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul.
Every Sunday, a city of more than 2 million unites. A community of fans thousands strong anticipates. A team of 53 players charges the field.
It's a sweep left to the fullback, and a great block springs him to the outside. He's up the left sideline.
And one grocery store is proud to support them all.
20. He's going to outrace everyone to the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs. A Kansas City Chiefs fan, they'll tailgate just about anywhere. And they live to hear the three most important words ever.
Tailgate Kansas City!
With Hy-Vee's weekly tailgate specials, you'll find everything you need for your next Chiefs tailgate or Chiefs party. Stop into Hy-Vee and stock up with new tailgate specials every week.
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on KCChiefs.com.
Welcome back here in the Red Zone here on KCChiefs.com on a Wednesday as we hit the hump day, looking back at the big win against the Rams, looking ahead to the game with the Tennessee Titans. We'll do that right now with Chiefs fullback Tim Castile here in the Red Zone. Tim, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, doing great.
Yeah, doing a lot better after a 27-13 win. Life is a lot better in the NFL when you're coming off a win, isn't it?
Oh, it definitely is. We just wanted to go out and get that San Diego taste out of our mouth, you know, going out there and getting beat up like we did. We couldn't wait to get back on the field and go get a win against St. Louis.
Yeah, the game against San Diego, you brought it up, so let me follow up with that. Those games happen in the NFL. I think you never want them to happen, but they happen in the NFL from time to time, and you know, you've got to be able to put it behind you. Is that the type of game you guys obviously put it behind you for the game against the Rams? Is that the type of game that lingers, or is that the type of game that actually makes you more focused for the next game coming up?
You know what? It can linger, and that's not what you want to happen. It was a tough loss. We were expecting to go out there and get a win and just take a stranglehold on the division, and it didn't happen. And that was one of the, I think that was one of the toughest losses that we've had this year. But Coach Haley always talks about your characters when you get knocked down. What do you do next after you get knocked down? And after a bad defeat like that, you have to refocus, or it can linger. And then you're talking about 2-3 games down the road, you're looking back, and it's been and you've lost 2 or 3 games that you should have won because you've been thinking about a game 3 weeks ago.
You mentioned Coach Haley. Let's go back in time a couple of years. 2008, you're a member of the Arizona Cardinals. Todd Haley's the offensive coordinator for the Cardinals. Week 16, next to last week of the season, you guys, being the Arizona Cardinals, fall 47-7 on a snowy day in New England. The same type of game, maybe worse than what it was against San Diego. And I remember everybody saying at that point, boy, this Cardinal team, you bounce back the next week, you win 34-21 against Seattle, you're 9-7, you're NFC West champions. But largely based upon how you guys played against New England, the national pundits were saying this may be the worst playoff team in the history of the NFL. Now, obviously that didn't end up being the case because you would beat the Falcons, win at Carolina, beat an Eagles team at home, and then have the Steelers on the ropes in the Super Bowl with just a couple of minutes to go. Did that loss to the Chargers at all feel like the way things went against Arizona? And you know, and is that potential to bounce back and have a great run there the way it was in Arizona?
I believe so, because when I was in Arizona, we were looking – forward to getting that home game. And I think that winning the division and getting a home game is huge. And so when we were in Arizona, man, it was and let me tell you another thing. When I was in Arizona, man, you hated playing in the cold. You hated it. And so when we got up there, when we got to New England, I mean, guys were almost ready to pack it in, and that's what we did. We were just ready to go back home, and then you go on the next week. But I just think it's a different scenario here. We're still in the fight for our division, and so I think that it's different. We had the division basically wrapped up in Arizona when we went to New England, and it's a different story here. We have to be focused every week when we go out because we can't afford to lose any other game.
You know, and I'm not going to belabor it. This will be my last question about San Diego. But I've had a lot of people ask me, and I've gone on a number of shows around the country, people asking about it. You talked about the cold, being from Arizona and having to go play in the cold and how nobody really wanted to get out in it. I don't think anybody minded a nice 85, 86, 87 degree. I heard it was 87 at the stadium in San Diego. I don't suppose anybody minded a beautiful, sunshiny day in San Diego. But when you get up and go to work every day and live in 25 to 35, 40 degree weather, when you guys went out there on the field and it was 87 and hot, you know, did that really suck the energy out of the ball? Not that that's the only reason you lost. Tip the cap to the Chargers. They obviously had a good day. You know, we give a lot of credit to them. But I was curious, did a hot day maybe drain the life out of a football team when they're coming from the cold, the same way the cold might make a warm weather team not want to play?
I don't believe so. We had a week to get acclimated to it. We had practiced inside. We had the heat on. Guys had been sweating all week. I just think we went out and got our tails kicked. That's basically what happened. When you get out there, man, it's warm. It's beautiful. it was a great day for football. We just didn't get the job done.
That's no doubt that's a man's answer. Tim Castillo is with us. Chiefs fullback here in the red zone. All right, so the next week comes up St. Louis. How much were you guys chomping at the bit and ready to get out on the field against St. Louis with that game in your rearview mirror?
It couldn't come fast enough. Everybody was ready to get – first off, you're ready to get back on the practice field just to get the taste out of your mouth, and then you can't wait. But Sunday can't get here fast enough when you go through a loss like that. So we were really chomping at the bit to get back and just show people that that's not the team that we are. We can bounce back, and we know how to fight, and we know how to win on the road.
And you did that with a very convincing win in St. Louis, 27-13. I'm curious, we talk about football being the ultimate team game. You win as a team, you lose as a team. In this game, you guys would eventually get the offense going and have a heck of a day offensively. 200-plus yards rushing on the ground, 383 yards of total offense. That's a very good day in any NFL game. But it took a little while to get going, and the defense seemed to step up. They had a kind of a bent a little bit on the opening drive. The Rams get three. Special team struggles a little bit, gives the Rams a short field after a punt, and then the defense nails them down, keeps it at 6-0, and then doesn't let them get on the scoreboard again until you guys are up by two touchdowns in the fourth quarter. How much did the way the defense answered the bell and did not let it go the way it went in San Diego and held things down to a field goal, how much did that give the offense a chance to really find itself and figure out how to attack the Rams?
It was inspiring, man. We root for each other during the game. I don't know if y'all can see on the sidelines. When the defense is on the field, the offense guys, we're watching, cheering them on. We want to see them succeed. And it takes all phases of the game. We talk about that every week. All phases of the game have to, for us to be a good team, all phases of the game have to contribute. And so for us, see our defense go out. If we're not getting the job done right now, we're telling them, well, guys, we're going to get this thing going. Soon, they just keep the field goals. We're going to get this thing going. And for them to have two or three possessions, I think, man, turn the ball over again. And for them to hold those guys, it was inspiring for us to say, look, man, we got to get it going on offense so we can win the game. We can't keep putting our defense in bad spots.
How much does, and we're talking to Tim Castillo, Chiefs fullback here, a 200-yard rushing day as a team? I mean, you guys obviously have a two-headed and sometimes three and four and five-headed attack on that ground game. But as a whole, how much is 200 yards on the ground a real star in your cap, a feather in your guys' cap on offense when you can put 200 on your opposition?
You know what? Every week we take pride in running the ball. We know we're going to do it. The other teams know we're going to do it. That's really what we rely on. 200 is great. You know, me being a fullback, so I want to rush for 300. I want to run the ball every play. but we can't do that. But we take pride in it, man, in being the number one rushing team in the league. It's something that we take pride in, take a lot of pride in. We want to go out and hit in practice, doing 9-on-7, doing things like that that prepare us for the game. And, I mean, we just take a lot of pride in coming out and being able to run the football on other teams.
Do you adjust how you block depending upon who's in the backfield, or do you just block and it's up to them to figure out where to go?
I don't do too much adjusting. I kind of thought about that when we first got Thomas and Jamal, and it's not that big of an adjustment. Jamal's going to be there a little bit faster. I know that Thomas, and everybody knows, Thomas likes to go downhill. Jamal's an outside guy, but Jamal had the long run inside. But, I really don't do much adjusting for which guy's in that would take too much thinking on the field.
with Jamal Charles right now, he's only a handful of yards behind. He's in third in the league rushing title race. He's got 1,303. First place is Arian Foster, 1,345, and then Maurice Jones-Drew, 1,324. He's 42 yards out of first place for the rushing title. Is that something? I mean, the goal is to win games and to win championships. We understand that. But is that a nice feather in the cap? Is that a nice thing? Would it be nice to pick that up, get Jamal Charles a rushing title in addition to being AFC West champions and powering through the playoffs?
Absolutely. It's tough. As a fullback, you're not going to get a lot of glory, and that's something that we understand. But for us to go out And we want to get – we want that would be great for Jamal to lead the league in rushing, and we want to get Thomas to get to 1,000 yards. I think we took a lot of pride in Thomas getting to 10,000 this year, and I think that and I think we take a lot of pride in trying to get Jamal the rushing title. I think it would be great to have him get the rushing title, us lead the league in rushing, and us go to the playoffs. That would be a great trifecta.
We talked about a 25th player in the history of the NFL with 10,000 yards, Thomas Jones, going over that mark in St. Louis. He's 172 away for 1,000. You touched on it. They'd be the seventh pair of teammates ever to rush for 1,000 yards in the same season, and that would be a tremendous accomplishment. When you think about 10,000 yards under the belt of Thomas Jones, as fans, we know that's a lot. But as a guy who's out there, you know, banging it up, the everything that goes into working and getting ready to play, does it kind of make your head spin even a little bit to think about 10,000 career yards?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, he'll be the second guy. I was with Edge when he got his in Arizona, and it's amazing to see the longevity that it takes and all the pounding on your body, man. That's the deal. It's the work that guys like that put into it. It's inspiring to see them every day. It's a lot to learn from guys like that, especially Thomas, to get up and see how he comes to work every day, how he's in the film room, how he's in the weight room. And you try to emulate those guys. And so to see him have played for this long and to get those kind of yards, it's really impressive.
Yeah, he's got a ways to go to catch up with Edgerrin James. 12,246, that'd be Edge that Tim was talking about. But no doubt, Thomas Jones has already got him in the guns category, right? You talked about working in the weight room. His biceps definitely are already far superior to Edgerrin James, correct?
Yeah, his arms are a little bit different.
Yeah. he's got some of the best guns the league has ever seen. How about this week against the Tennessee Titans? I've said, look, coming off that San Diego game, there's no doubt you guys are going to be focused and give St. Louis, you know, your best shot. And I think if you get to the end of the year and it's the division rival, the Raiders, a team you owe 1 to after having a game that you very easily could have won, but the Raiders were able to get the victory at the end. If that's what's standing between you, plus it's the Raiders and it's Arrowhead, and Arrowhead's going to be nuts. If you get to that final game and all you need is a win against the Raiders, I don't think there's any way they stand in your way. But this game, to me, looks like a little bit of a valley. Coming off that big, hey, we got to get back going again mindset against the Rams, and maybe the potential for the Raiders looming ahead to be a look-ahead situation. Am I right in thinking there's the potential for a letdown, or am I totally missing the boat?
I gotta say, you're missing the boat on that one.
Okay,
man, I'm not worried about the Raiders right now. To be honest with you, we have to win these next two games to get in. So that starts with this week. We got to end up 2-1 after this Sunday coming up. We need to be 2-1. That's all our focus is on, is getting to 2-1. We have to get the win versus the Titans at home this week, and then we'll worry about what we have to worry about. But if we get ahead of ourselves, we're done. And we can't afford to have a letdown. We can't afford to have a letdown, because you have a letdown right now and we don't go to the stands.
2-1, Tim, obviously referring to the record in the fourth quarter, which we hear Todd Haley talk about all the time. 1-1 right now with San Diego and St. Louis here in the fourth quarter. 2-1 with Tennessee, and then hopefully 3-1 after you get to 2-1. That makes me feel good to know that the focus is solely about the Tennessee Titans. They play a 4-3. Anything different? I know you were up against the Rams and they were a 4-3 front as well. The 3-4 and the 4-3, does that change at all for you and how you've got to work as far as picking guys up on the running plays and the blocking schemes?
Not too much. We played some teams and we've been going back and forth ever since the preseason. Our defense runs a 3-4, but we don't really change our attack. We don't change what we do. We're going to do what we do and what we do best as far as our running the ball and our running plays. We don't – too much doesn't change going from a 3-4 to a 4-3. You still got to get the guys blocked and open up lanes. Either way you go.
All right, we're talking to Tim Castillo, Chiefs fullback here in the red zone. All right, before I let you go, Tim, our final four quickies, and I'll start you with this. Have you seen that ESPNU commercial where they talk about Roll Tide? I think it's about, you know, how people are passionate about the colleges, and it's they make it sound as if everyone in Alabama, no matter what they're talking about, when they get done talking, they finish with Roll Tide. How accurate is that commercial?
It's pretty accurate, man. I actually just saw it a couple of days ago, and they hit the nail on the head with that one. It's everywhere, especially around Tuscaloosa, Birmingham area. And everything will Roll Tide.
Yeah, it's a great commercial. Of course, Tim went to Alabama. That's why we bring it up. Whether they're at a funeral, giving a eulogy, at a wedding, giving a toast, a cop giving a ticket, everybody wraps up with Roll Tide. I love that one. I thought that one was great. All right, let's go next. Bama or Michigan State? Who wins in that Capital One Bowl?
I gotta go with Bama. I got my little brother down there, and he's playing now, and talking to him, they're getting ready. Got to go with my side on that one. I know Michigan State's had a very good season, but I think with our experience and the guys that we have and them playing in big games, I think that Alabama ends up pulling it out.
All right, and if people don't know, Tim's father, Jeremiah Castillo, also an NFL player, corner for the Denver Broncos, legendary strip of Ernest Biner in the Browns-Broncos AFC Championship game. I'm curious, have you ever had, since you play the same position, you ever had the opportunity to meet Ernest Biner?
You know what? I actually did meet him. He came and worked out me and LaRon McClain at Alabama, and I met him. It was funny just because knowing that what had happened between him and my dad and the history that they have and that they've been linked together.
Did he know? Did he make the connection? Did he know you were Jeremiah's son?
Yeah, absolutely. He knew who I was, and I knew him. Ernest Biner was one of my favorite players growing up. Just being young, I really didn't understand what had happened when I was at the time. But growing up, I remember Ernest Biner playing for the Redskins, mm-hmm. So I had a ton of respect for him as a running back and as a player.
And that was one of the great things. He did a great job on that drive all the way down the field to get him into that position. And then just a great play by your father and people, I'm sure, all of us veterans like myself, remember it and remember where we were watching that. But you're right. The great story then for Ernest was that went on to the Redskins and had a chance to have great success there and get a Super Bowl ring with the Redskins. So that was the great, a great thing for his career that he ended up having great success even after his days with the Browns. All right. Now, this is probably the most important question. And that is, have you given a lot of tips to Sean Smith about how to play fullback?
No, Sean's got a down pat, man. he knows it. He's done a great job. I was watching the tape yesterday, and, he hit a defensive lineman on one of those plays on the goal line. Mm-hmm. And he just smashed him, bent him over backwards. I don't give Sean any tips. He's already scored a touchdown. He's been here for a couple of touchdowns, so he's got it down, man.
Yeah, it's I want to see the full house backfield. I want to see him, you, and maybe Cox all out in the backfield together, and see all the fullbacks, all the guys who do the dirty work out there, and just fire two of you out in front of the other one, and let one of you guys pick up the glory down there at the goal line. That'd be my dream as a former short, fat fullback myself for my Pee Wee football days. I always like it when the fullbacks get a little glory, so that's always fun to watch you guys. Hey Tim, it's always great talking to you. We really appreciate the time. Best of luck with the rest of the season. Hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you again soon.
All right, thanks for having me.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com. It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angling, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jamal Charles.
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job and we'll win this game.
And the Chiefs put the hammer down.
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good! Ryan Suckup wins the game in overtime.
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to kcchiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul.
Hey Chiefs fans, I'm Josh Looney of KCChiefs.com.
And I am the Internet. Great to be here, Josh.
We're here to tell you about all the new and exciting things going on at KCChiefs.com.
I usually don't endorse websites, but KCChiefs.com is legit.
I know. At KCChiefs.com, you can check out my daily blog, exclusive video content, see what's going on with the team, learn about the Chiefs cheerleaders, and much more.
Yeah, buddy.
That's not all. You can also interact with other fans in Chiefs 365. Chiefs 365 is the place for Chiefs fans to interact, give feedback, and be connected with everything Chiefs.
Fan feedback? That is awesome. But Josh, I really want to buy a jersey.
At KCChiefs.com, you can do that too. The Chiefs Pro Shop is the best place on the web. Buy all of your favorite Chiefs gear, gifts, and much more.
Whoa, system overload.
You want the Chiefs? Go to the Chiefs at KCChiefs.com.
Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on KCChiefs.com.
All right, wrapping things up here in the Red Zone at KCChiefs.com. Remember, you can get your tickets to the remaining games and playoff games right here at the site. Upper right corner here on the site is where you can find it. Just click on the tickets icon, and all the information you need is right there. Let's do some emails. We've been remiss. We've been so full of content here of late. We haven't gotten to some of the emails. We're a little bit over, a little bit late right now, but we'll go ahead and get a couple of emails here. Got a couple of good ones. Remember, redzone at kcchiefs.org. That's redzone at kcchiefs.org. Here's one from Lee. Soren, I remember Mitch Holthus saying on your show this past summer that for him, improvement would be meaningful football in December. Admittedly, the league helped out the cause by making sure that so many divisional games would be played later in the year. Beyond that, however, how about having every game played in December feel like life or death? Division leader, MVP talk, I'm just so very, very happy. Can we give Rookie of the Year honors to our entire draft class? Go Chiefs, Lee, down in the Ozarks. Lee, great point, and I'm glad you brought that up. That's one of the things that I know both Mitch and myself we like to do is, hey, let's put an expectation out there so that at the end of the year we don't just react. We talked about that. Well, we talked about that on Herm Edwards' final year, what the expectations would be, where you need to get to. Because at the end of the year, you can excuse away or make excuses for just about everything. But if you set a bar that you need to be at beforehand, when you've got a level, clear mind, level head and a clear mind, it makes it a lot easier for you to make an honest evaluation at the end of the year. Mitch said meaningful games in the month of December. We're there. It's happened because even if the Chiefs lose to the Tennessee Titans, they'll enter the Raider game knowing that they've got a chance to make the playoffs. If the Chargers would lose and they would win, they would make the playoffs. And for me, that's what it's about. A successful year is 16 meaningful games. Only 12 of 32 teams make the playoffs. Ideally, that's what you want to do. And if you never make the playoffs, if you're playing 16 meaningful games but always coming up short, yeah, that's a problem and changes have to be made. But for me, a successful year in the NFL is playing 16 meaningful games. If you do that, you're going to make the playoffs on a regular basis, and the Chiefs are going to play, as I said, 16 meaningful games. Regardless of what happens against Tennessee, it will be a meaningful game entered in there. Maybe I should amend that to knowing that the last weekend is a meaningful game. Somebody might play on Saturday and eliminate you, and that Sunday game becomes irrelevant, but maybe it should be still in it after 15 games would be the best way to describe what I think a successful season is, and the Kansas City Chiefs have been there. Here's one from Mark, great email, our sixth grade science teacher. Soren, can you confirm something for me? Maybe I'm the only one who feels this way. I find myself calling Romeo Crennel and his defense every name in the book for the first quarter every game, especially this past Sunday. You can fill in the expletives. The defense gives up yards, especially yards, and a few points seemingly every game. But by the end of the game, when the dust is settled, the defense has held the opponent to two or fewer touchdowns, with three exceptions, and has kept the team in the game. I hate waiting until the end of the game to feel good about that, but there it is. Numbers don't lie. Do that two more times and the playoffs look pretty good. You are right, Mark, and hey, I'll come back. I think it's something we've been talking about on Romeo Crennel going back to when he was signed, that his defense is always ranked higher in points allowed than they do in yards allowed. Now, the NFL uses yards allowed as its official statistic to rank defenses, but it's readily available, the points allowed as well. And I think that's a sign. If it happens once, that might be a coincidence. But when every year of the man's career as an NFL defensive coordinator, they've ranked better in points allowed than yards allowed, means he knows what yards he can afford to give up. Means he knows when to go for the jugular vein, to go for the attack, to go for the shutdown call, whether that's a blitz or dropping out of a blitz or whatever it is. The man consistently pushes the right buttons. Does it mean he's flawless? Does it mean he's perfect? No. Does it mean this defense is perfect? No. I think there's still places where they could upgrade the talent, but it means that maybe no one in the NFL does a better job getting the most out of the talent they have than Romeo Crennel. I'll say this about Charlie Weiss and Romeo Crennel. Their resumes, to me, mean that I will never say they're wrong. I may question why did they do something, wanting to talk to them and understand their thinking, but I know that every decision they make is well thought out and comes with a wealth of knowledge and experience behind it. And I think the Chiefs defense, I think you're absolutely right, Mark. I think it's clear. I think Romeo Crennel plays basically a base defense, gets a feel for what the game plan of the other team is, and then goes into his bag of tricks to start showing something new. I think they do play a little bit vanilla until they get their backs up against the goal line. Then they like to shut people down. And as we talked about earlier, that's what they did against the Rams, and that's why I think the defense was the real key to this team winning the football game, keeping St. Louis at bay. When the Rams had momentum and things going their way, they got it only to 6-0. That's not to say they do it every time, because it got out of hand with the Chargers. It got out of hand with the Broncos. Two games that really the defense wasn't able to get the job done. And, you know, the offense has to play its role as well. I'm not trying to pick on the defense, but you are right. For the most part, they're just not giving up a lot of points. The Texans scored a lot of points and it became a shootout. That's the other one. But the Colts, they didn't put a lot of points up there. And I think Romeo Crennel deserves a world of credit. It's not a coincidence. It's not a coincidence when you do it time and time again. He is one of the best defensive coordinators that ever lived, period. He's got the jewelry to prove it. Thanks to everybody who emailed us. Remember, it's redzone@kcchiefs.org for your emails. That's redzone@kcchiefs.org. So for Adam Pellegrino, for Brad Young, for Curtis Siebelt, for Brad Kubaner, this is Seren Petro saying thank you very much for joining us here in the Red Zone.
You've been listening to The Red Zone with Seren Petro. Join us again next week for more discussion of your Kansas City Chiefs. This has been an exclusive presentation of KCChiefs.com.